Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, we did it again. We've got another great big Friday show for you here on Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, Gloria Purvis is going to be here. You know Gloria? Gloria does the Morning Glory show with Brian Patrick on EWTN. Just a fantastic person, a wonderful host of that show. And she's going to come and talk with us about being Black and Catholic in America. Have you ever thought about that? I think there's a lot of folks think if you're Black, it almost guarantees that you're Protestant, and maybe a lot of people are surprised to find out quite how many Black people are Catholic here in the United States. And we'll talk to her about what that experience is. Does that make her a member of overlapping communities, or does that make her an outsider in every community that she's in? Gloria is well qualified to talk to about all that and share that with us. And we didn't do that because the Black Panther is opening this weekend. That's an extra bonus. 888-318-7884 is our number. This hour, the Me Too movement. It is the movement of the moment. Really horrific stories have come out about rich and powerful and famous men abusing or their position and mistreating women in the workplace. How do we respond to that as Catholics? How do we respond to what we're hearing? The obvious prevalence of the abuse and the obvious need for there to be justice, but also healing. Many calls for change. Does that apply to us as well? We're discussing the Me Too movement this hour here on Catholic Answers Live. If you have questions or would like to share your take, 888-318-7884. Our guest could not be more qualified to talk about this, Don Eden Goldstein. Don received a doctorate in sacred theology, summa cum laude, I might add, from the University of St. Mary of the Lake. The first woman to receive in the history of the university to receive a canonical doctorate. She also is an award-winning author under the pen name Don Eden, and now assistant professor of dogmatic theology at Holy Apostles College and Seminary in Cromwell, Connecticut. Her books include Remembering God's Mercy, also The Thrill of the Chaste, My Peace I Give You, Healing Sexual Wounds with the Help of the Saints, two of which I am holding up now for those of you who are watching. Don Eden Goldstein, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Si. I really appreciate it.
When I talk about your various accomplishments and whatnot, one thing maybe our listeners, some will know because they know you and some will not, you are a convert to the Catholic faith. Your story begins, you were born into a Jewish family in New York City. So just let us know a little bit about how you ended up here, a Catholic theologian talking about the Me Too movement with me.
Sure. Well, my family was light observance, but I did receive a Reformed Jewish upbringing, and I was a bat mitzvah, so I was an adult in the eyes of the Jewish faith. As a child, I had certain wounds. My parents divorced. That was a big, big wound. And after they were separated, I was sexually abused for the first time. Now, I realize myself suffering from PTSD that there are people who are triggered. So throughout this show, I want to be very careful to use only the most general terms, the most general language when speaking about abuse out of sensitivity for listeners. But it is important to be truthful and honest with oneself and to bring things such as the problems of abuse into the light, which is why I am open about this. My first abuse occurred, it was committed by an acquaintance, actually a janitor at the temple that my family attended. Later on, after my parents' divorce, I was abused at home, particularly by a boyfriend of my mother. And so as a teenager, I had wounds. I suffered from depression, which was cyclical. It was cyclical suicidal depression, which was only later diagnosed accurately as PTSD, and not simply major depression as it was originally diagnosed. And I felt, when I was a college student, I felt that I wanted love, but I didn't believe that I was valuable for who I was. I thought, because of my wounds, that I was valuable only for what I did. And so I tried to find love through things that were not love. I didn't believe that any man would possibly want to marry me unless he knew me sexually. And so since I was acting out of my wounds, this ultimately only compounded my unhappiness. In one of the books you mentioned, The Thrill of the Chaste, I talk about how, as a Catholic, I experienced healing from that particular wound that had caused me to act out in my younger years. But I did find something that I really enjoyed in life that was a productive thing for me, which was writing. So in my 20s, I became a writer, specifically a rock journalist, a rock and roll historian. And I'm still very proud of that time of my life. Since I loved music of the 1960s, I tracked down artists from that era like Del Shannon, Gene Pitney, Brian Wilson, and interviewed them and wrote about them for record labels that would hire me to write the booklets, liner notes for reissues of artists' music. But there was still a God-shaped vacuum in my life that was ultimately fulfilled through discovering the truth of God in Christ. And that came about, as I've talked about on Catholic Answers before, through Chesterton. I was interviewing a rock musician. His name is Ben Eschbach, and he was at the time in a power pop band from Los Angeles called the Sugar Plastic. You can look them up. As a friend of mine says, they're just a Google and a gaggle away. And I was asking Ben Eschbach what he was reading lately, and he mentioned this book that I had never heard of by this author I had never heard of, The Man Who Was Thursday by G.K. Chesterton. And I read this book just expecting to have something I could talk about with the musician when I saw him again. And to my surprise, I found this very profound theology of Christian suffering that Chesterton lays out in The Man Who Was Thursday that led me first to become a Protestant, because I had this image of Catholicism as being about rules, so I decided I didn't like rules. I was going to be ABC, anything but Catholic. Wanted to do my own thing, have my own identity. Ultimately, as I've said in interviews that people can find on the Catholic Answers website, if they look up Dawn Eden on Catholic.com, I go into much more detail about my conversion in those earlier interviews. But ultimately, I found that it was in the church that Jesus founded where I could have my true identity as the woman, the daughter of God in Christ, whom God created me to be. But once I became Catholic, I still was this person who had suffered the trauma of my parents' divorce, who had suffered the trauma of sexual abuse, who had suffered the trauma of my own sins, because while I was not responsible for my abuse, nobody's responsible for their abuse, I was responsible for actions that I did as an adult that were sinful. So I needed to find healing, and I knew that there was no other place than the Catholic faith where I could find healing. Not to say that psychology doesn't have its place, but spiritual wounds need spiritual healing. And in the books that you mentioned earlier, My Peace I Give You, Healing Sexual Wounds with the Help of the Saints, and Remembering God's Mercy, I write about how I found that place of healing in and through my Catholic faith, the life of the sacraments and Scripture, and through learning about saints who had wounds like mine, who found healing in Christ.
Dawn, it's such a beautiful story, as all conversion stories are, because they end up with the person being the friend of Christ, which is about as good as it can get for us. But I wonder, having lived through all that, having spent so much of your life helping others to find that healing, then this thing happens, this Me Too movement, where these things are coming out that I don't feel like I'm an overly innocent person, but I have to say I was shocked by that some of these people who seem to be entirely respectable people behaved in this way towards women. So what is your response when you start to hear these stories coming out?
Well, first of all, it's very important that the whole problem of sexual abuse come out into the light. And although you are correct in saying that the Me Too movement is being spearheaded by women who want to raise consciousness about abuse perpetrated against women, very often by men who are the perpetrators, very often being men who are in positions of power. At the same time, it's important that abuse perpetrated against men come into the light as well, that women are not the only victims. And I know you didn't mean that, but I just wanted to be extremely clear about that for our listeners. And at the same time, while it's important that this problem be brought into the light and that we bring perpetrators to justice and that the victims learn that they're not alone and that we put safeguards in place to prevent further victimization, the Me Too movement, and this is not in any way to disparage it, but it's just an honest way of speaking, it only takes us so far. Oh. Just as in if somebody has experienced a tragedy, like a wartime tragedy where they're physically injured, it's no slander against the doctor who fixes a person's injured arm to say that the physical healing only takes us so far. So with the Me Too movement, it's like a forensic approach, a more kind of material, secular approach to saying that to stop abuse, we need to do these take these legal actions, take these governmental actions, we need to take these social actions, which are important. But it's no slander against the movement to say that leaves the whole problem of how do we heal. And that's the area that I've been researching for the past 6 years since the publication of my first book on healing, my piece I give you. I've been focusing on finding healing through Jesus Christ, the divine physician.
Dawn Eden Goldstein is our guest. We're talking the Me Too movement, or I don't know if you're supposed to say hashtag Me Too movement, but this striking moment in our society's ongoing history where we're realizing a lot of things are not as maybe many thought they were. In particular, Dawn, it's fascinating to hear you say that about it can only take us so far. So we'll talk about how to go that farther step when we come back. If you have questions or comments about the Me Too movement, we'd like to discuss it with Dawn. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. If you spell that out, it's 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we are going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off, free shipping, and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge and become better at defending your faith. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they each found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous time in the church. How can we do the same? Reform yourself is a good place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Don Eden Goldstein, is the author of quite a few books, actually. We're talking particularly, I suppose maybe the most appropriate one to mention again and again today is My Peace I Give You, Healing Sexual Wounds with the Help of the Saints. That's from a few years ago. That's available from, is it Ave Maria Press?
Yes, that's right.
But the best place to get it is at shop.catholic.com. I don't know if you know that, Don, but that's the best place to get it.
Yes, I'm very thankful that shop.catholic.com has it.
Yeah. Again, our number, 888-318-7884. We're talking about the Me Too movement, 888-318-7884. And, you know, I suppose the root level thing that probably everybody knows about Jesus is forgiveness, all right? Like, you're supposed to forgive. When we're talking about things like sexual abuse, for example, the things that are being reported in the Me Too movement, what role does forgiveness play? Or are we asking too much of someone to say you move towards forgiveness? You need to move that direction.
Thank you for asking that, Cy, because it's such an important question. The first thing that we should all be aware of, whether in the church or in wider society, is that forgiveness should never be used as a substitute for justice. It should never be something that's opposed to justice. Too many times in the Catholic world, before the abuse scandals went public, mm-hmm. People who reported abuse were pressured sometimes, not all the time, but many of them reported being pressured. Well, Father so and so says he didn't mean to do such and such, so you have to forgive him.
Ah, yeah.
And that is itself an abuse of what, you know, forgiveness is. It should never be something that's imposed on someone, and it should never be used instead of justice. I think that a good model for us in this respect is Saint Maria Goretti, who, after being sexually attacked, because there's no other way to describe what happened to her. Often people will emphasize, oh, but she stayed a virgin. Yes, physically, Maria Goretti was a virgin, but she was genuinely sexually attacked, mm-hmm. sexually assaulted, and when she was on her deathbed, she was asked by a priest, do you forgive your attacker? And she said, yes, I forgive him, and I want him to be in heaven with me. But she also was asked by the police, what happened? Who did it? And she told the police exactly what happened.
Right,
and there
right.
was no conflict in that.
Right.
There was no conflict in, you know, forgiving him and wanting to make darn sure that he went to justice and didn't harm anyone, you know, anymore.
Right.
And Maria is a saint, because of her forgiving heart, but also because of her service to truth. You know, if Maria had said when she was on her deathbed, oh, you know, nothing really happened, and I don't want that nice person to get into trouble, she wouldn't be a saint.
Yes, that's a beautiful point, Dawn. That, yeah, telling the truth, that's it keeps the forgiveness connected to reality. You don't have to pretend the reality isn't real.
Exactly. That's right. So forgiveness can never be opposed to truth or opposed to justice. Moreover, forgiveness is not the same as reconciliation. And I think that's also something that is difficult for people to understand. Because, like, for example, you know, with I know from my own experience, even though my mother was not my abuser, I know that I had pain in my relationship with my mother that was related to the abuse. Now, I want to say also, praise God, my mother and I have fully reconciled. She's supportive of my apostolate, and I thank God for that. But I can tell you honestly that I remember going to confession and telling the confessor, I'm mad at my mother. And like many abuse victims, I couldn't quite explain what it was, that I'm mad at her because she hasn't acknowledged the pain that the abuse caused, which I believe she was aware of, and I believe she could have prevented, and so on. I couldn't say all that. But what the priest said was, well, you know, you have to forgive your mother, so for your penance, call your mother. And that was a terrible thing for me, because what the priest was saying is that if anyone has harmed you, you have to initiate going to that person and making contact. That's not what forgiveness is. I had to look to the catechism to find out what forgiveness really is. And the catechism specifies that forgiveness is interior, and that it ideally can and it does lead to reconciliation, but that the command to forgive is fulfilled even when we forgive only interiorly. And in the case of the commandment, honor one's father and mother, if our father or our mother is abusive, then we are an occasion of sin for that person. And if forgiveness means being loving, wanting God's best for that person, then for me to forgive, if I'm someone who's been abused by a parent, for me to forgive that parent can mean having no outreach to that parent, so that that parent doesn't have an opportunity to be abusive.
Wow. Yep. Again, 888-318-7884, our number. We're talking with Dawn Eden Goldstein about the hashtag MeToo movement. I want to get to some calls. Shall we go to the phones?
Sure.
Done? All right, let's start with Beth in Duluth, Minnesota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Beth, thank you for your call. You are on with Dawn Eden Goldstein. Your question, please.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I typically would have turned the station to hear the hashtag MeToo movement being talked about again, but I actually paused and felt moved to call in when you mentioned the impact to men. And I just want to thank you for that. And I really appreciate you taking this opportunity here in a public forum to bring that up. It's so important, and it hasn't been mentioned enough, and certainly is an important piece of sexual abuse. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Beth. I appreciate that. Yes, I do think that it's very important to mention. And in my experience since writing my piece, I give you, I've found that the statistics with regard to the percentage of men who have suffered at least childhood sexual abuse, I don't know about the percentage with adult sexual abuse, but I have found that the statistics of men who have suffered abuse in childhood are grossly underestimated, and I think it's simply because they're not reported, that there's a real stigma attached to reporting that for men, because in meeting victims, meeting readers of my book, I think actually that there may in fact be more male victims of childhood sexual abuse in terms of percentage-wise than female. And my thought about that, this is completely anecdotal and I could be wrong, is that for the abusers who abuse young girls, it's a kind of a crime of opportunity, where there might be this young girl who's living with her mom and the mom's boyfriend, mm-hmm. and the boyfriend in this close proximity with the girl takes advantage of that and abuses. Whereas when I speak to men who suffered childhood abuse, it's someone who is a predator who sought out that little boy and sought out other boys, so that the predators who prey upon boys have more victims.
Again, Dawn Eden Goldstein is our guest. We're talking about the Me Too movement, and we're talking, in addition, about how we move to the state of healing, which is the most important thing. We'll be right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Look to EWTN for inspiring Lenten programming.
Jesus calls all of us to leave something behind. And Lent is a providential time to acknowledge what that is and then to do it. Now look, we've all got something to leave behind. Jesus knows it. We know it. We're better off without it. And we can't unreservedly follow him until we leave that behind.
Lenten programs now through Holy Thursday on EWTN Radio and TV.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information and discourse on crucial issues, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. And as a special bonus, if you order online, we'll add an ebook copy of 15 Myths, Mistakes, and Misrepresentations about the Deuterocanon to your order absolutely free. Get your free ebook today. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by logging on to our online shop at shop.catholic.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, super big Friday show. I don't want to neglect to remind you that for this month, all of the 20 Answers books, all 26 of the 20 Answers books, when you buy them together, are on sale for 60% off. That's, you just pay 40% of their usual costs and you get them. And you know what else? They get shipped to you for free. You just go to shop.catholic.com and get your entire complete set of all 26 20 Answers books from Catholic Answers on all kinds of different subjects. 60% off, no shipping. Go to shop.catholic.com. We are back and talking a bit about the Me Too movement. If you're not familiar with that, the Me Too movement has to do with this kind of moment in which people are taking the opportunity to talk about many things that have remained hidden for a long time in relation to sex abuse. I spoke at the beginning about how women were speaking out about how men had abused them. And you made the very important point, don't forget about men. And Beth just made that point. And you don't have to worry about me. I don't feel scolded. that's a very important part of this. But I want to ask you a little bit about, you began by saying that as important as the Me Too movement is, and without any disparaging of it, because it's very important for people to get justice. It's very important for people to get to say, yes, this happened to me. You said there's more that or I, now I'm forgetting exactly how you said it, but it's not adequate. It's not the full response. There has to be more response.
If you're traumatized, there's more than the physical trauma. There's the emotional trauma, but also we keenly feel the spiritual trauma, and especially as Catholics, you know, regardless of whether our abuse was committed by someone acting by someone acting as a member of the church or not, the spiritual component is something that we feel deeply when we've suffered abuse.
Can you talk a little bit about your own healing related to that, related to your spiritual healing? How did you come to a place of spiritual healing?
Well, thank you for asking about that, Sai, because that really is my strongest area of expertise. In that, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a sociologist. I just speak as a survivor of the abuse, but also as someone who's studied theology and now has a doctorate in sacred theology. So, when I first entered the Catholic Church in Holy Week 2006, I knew that as far as spiritual healing went, there was nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. I had to find that healing in the church. And so I started to read the works of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, a book called Peace of Soul, another book called Calvary and the Mass. And I started to learn this theology of suffering, redemptive suffering, that Archbishop Sheen talks about. And then I started also to study Ignatian spirituality, which became the topic of my other book on healing, Remembering God's Mercy. And through those, I developed personally a kind of spirituality of wounds. I have these wounds emotionally, spiritually, from abuse. And when I pray at Mass, I'm looking at the crucifix, and I'm thinking about Jesus, who I'm going to receive. And I think about how Jesus was and forever, you know, will always be someone who has wounds. We know from St. John's Gospel that Jesus, in his glorified body, chose to retain his wounds, and that they are now no longer sources of pain, but they are rather powerful reminders of his grace, that he voluntarily chose to suffer for my sins, for all the sins of the world, so that this same heart which was pierced might radiate grace. As a Catholic, I know that through my baptism, I have been incorporated into Christ and united with his suffering, his death, and resurrection. Now, there are times, thankfully not all the time, I do have joy and happiness, but there are times when I'm really just feeling the passion, I'm feeling the union with Jesus in his suffering and dying, and not feeling the union with his resurrection. But what I've learned is that Jesus, when he comes to me in the Eucharist, even though he's coming to me as he is now, the risen Jesus would not be who he is if it wasn't for his wounds, for his historical life. Jesus' history is not erased with the resurrection. Not even his memories are erased with the resurrection. Jesus remembers every bit of spit that he felt directed at him. He remembers every blow. He remembers having his clothes ripped off of him. I don't want to get too graphic, but, you know, we've seen the Passion of the Christ, or we've just looked at a crucifix, and we know from the Stations of the Cross, Jesus was stripped of his clothes. If that isn't sexual abuse, I don't know. I don't know what is. Certainly, he can identify profoundly with those who've suffered any kind of abuse. And yet he can now remember all of that. Now, he doesn't remember them as though they were good things. He knows that they were evil things. But what he remembers when he remembers his passion, this is something that I say, I think, Remembering God's Mercy. He remembers the passionate love with which he chose to suffer this so that he might heal us. And so if I can enter into Jesus' memories, then I can see that even though the abuse that was done to me was evil, Jesus was not separated from me at the time that I suffered this abuse. Jesus was with me in a profound way that I was in a mystical way suffering with him. And because I walked this Via Crucis, this way of the cross, with him, I now know that my own way of the cross has its end in the resurrection, and that the invisible grace of the risen Christ is with me even when I don't feel it. You know, part of the definition of grace is that we don't feel it. But we can, over time, feel or begin to feel its effects in us. And one of the effects of that grace is simply having the knowledge that I am not alone.
You know, when I hear you speak of it, however, I have to say I end up with a question related to your, you know, feeling angry at your mom. And that is, wasn't there ever anger at God that you had to overcome? Was there ever anger at him that you had to move beyond?
That's a profound question that you're asking, Cy, and I'm shy about answering it because I don't want to lie to you or to myself. I don't consciously feel angry at God, but I have noticed many times that I have had things that I struggle with where I think, if only this abuse hadn't happened to me, or if only God hadn't permitted me to sin, certainly God never positively wanted me to sin.
Right.
But even if something isn't positively in his will, it may be something he permits. I mean, that's part of his omnipotence, that he permits my free will even when I sin against him. So sometimes I will catch myself thinking that, you know, if such and such hadn't happened, my life would be so much better. And that's a kind of a hidden resentment against God. And that's something that I seek to work out through staying close to the sacraments, the Eucharist and confession, through scripture reading, through prayer, and through having a good spiritual director to learn to see how God has always loved me, has never stopped loving me, has only, you know, permitted things in as much as that these things, being part of my history, can help me to learn how to return his love in a new and more beautiful way.
We're talking the Me Too movement, and our guest is Don Eden Goldstein, a theologian and survivor and former rock music journalist. you got a big resume. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. We've got calls. I want to get to those calls, but it's the right time to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Tim Staples, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off free shipping and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Whatever I have learned, writes Catholic Answers founder Carl Keating, I have learned from the masters of the craft. In his new book, Booked for Life, a bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist, Carl gives future generations a roadmap of what it takes and what it means to become a Catholic apologist. In the way only Carl can, he recounts numerous real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he's learned. Then, drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. Order your copy of Booked for Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest, one of the good ones, Don Eden Goldstein, also writes under the name Don Eden. So if you look up Don Eden, you will find her as well. Second hour, I want to just remind you, Gloria Purvis is going to be here from Morning Glory, the show on the EWTN Mornings. And we're going to talk about being Black and Catholic in America. Looking forward to talking with Gloria. But if you can't stand strong opinions and sturdy Catholic teaching, maybe you better find something else to do when Gloria is here. We got lots of calls. Shall we go back to the phones,
sure.
Dawn?
All right.
Let's go to Gil. Gil, good to hear from you, Gil. You are on with Dawn Eden Goldstein. What's your question, Gil?
Oh, good evening. I know that in Proverbs 17:17 it says that a friend loveth at all times. How do I help a friend of mine that has PTSD where they take out their problems on you because of frustration or whatever going through that?
That's a very good question. And yes, people with PTSD, if they're not getting help, and sometimes even if they are getting help, may be liable to express their pain and act out in ways that can be difficult for those who are friends with them, love them, to cope with. I think, you know, the first thing that you can do is to pray for your friend. You know, really pray for your friend and love your friend and seek to be patient with your friend, which you very likely are already doing, especially since you quote that Proverbs line, a friend loveth at all times. Second, it would be good to read up yourself on PTSD. If you go to the Veterans Affairs website, the website, I can look up the URL. I think it might be ptsd.va.gov. But they have some good information just on, yes, it is ptsd.va.gov. So the more you know about it, the more you'll be sensitive to things that your friend, you know, might be doing, and it might help your patience to know that it's not you necessarily that your friend is responding to. Your friend is responding to the trauma. But it would also be good for you as a friend to recommend that your friend get psychological and spiritual help. This is something that I'm quite adamant about in my piece, I Give You. There are people whom one will encounter in the Catholic world who will either, if they, like I know some priests are like this, that if somebody comes up to them and says, I've suffered abuse, can you help me? Some people will just say, get thee to a therapist. as if a therapist is the only person who could possibly help someone who has suffered trauma. But there are also people in the Catholic world, and we've all met them, who will say, well, you just need to go to adoration, and you just need to pray more rosaries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I say in my piece I give you, the proper response is not an isolated psychological response or isolated spiritual response, because we're not simply brains walking around and we're not simply spirits
floating around.
Floating around, exactly. Thank you. Yes, that's right. Don't want to get my metaphors mixed up. We're both. So if you can encourage your friend to seek psychological help and good spiritual help, that would be great. You might want to, if your friend is someone who goes to your parish, you might want to ask your pastor, if I can convince my friend to get help, do you know of a priest in this diocese who ministers in particular to victims of abuse? Because it is better to speak to someone who, if you're getting spiritual help, someone who has experience in that area. Also, if your friend is Catholic, you might want to recommend CatholicTherapists.com, because it is important to have a therapist who, if the therapist doesn't share your faith, at least a therapist who's not going to try to actively, you know, undermine or attack one's faith. So mm-hmm. CatholicTherapists.com is a good resource for people seeking a therapist who shares their faith. At the same time, and I do want to be very strong in emphasizing this, even if you use CatholicTherapist.com, look at the therapist's degrees, look at where the therapist got his or her degrees from. And, you know, if you're concerned, you can even call up the university and say, did such and so and so graduate from this university? You can find out the person's licensing number, because I once went to a therapist who claimed to have a doctorate and was Catholic. Turned out that his diploma was from a degree mill. This person, who was not a helpful therapist, this person actually harmed me. So not abused me, but wasn't someone trustworthy. So even as I recommend Catholic therapists, I just want to say, do your due diligence and just concentrate on getting the best help, whether it's for oneself or for a friend, Gil. I hope that helps.
Does that help you, Gil?
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. God bless you.
Happy to take that call, Gil. Thank you. Let's go to Todd in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Todd, you are on with Don Eden Goldstein. Your question, please.
Yes, how are you?
Doing well, Todd. Thank you.
I've read your book, and I'd like to comment that I'm disabled, and I listened to the news, and recently I heard that the charitable organization that works in Haiti had a sexual scandal.
Yes, that's true.
And it also happened in Africa.
Yes.
And there's been a number of reports from the Catholic Church, sex scandals in Australia and Chile. I think that the abuse that's widespread, including Hollywood, and the whole phenomenon is a matter of a primal force trying to be restricted and controlled.
Todd, Todd, I'm going to let Don respond to that, because it does. I have to say, I find Todd somewhat convincing in this regard, like, that so much, there's just so much of this that it does. It seems like there's a new story all the time. Is this just the human condition, or is there some other way to approach this?
Well, I have to say that, I mean, this is something that you and I were discussing or touching on in conversation earlier when we were discussing the novel of yours that I had read Ad Limina, which is kind of a social commentary but written as science fiction, that we have a larger social problem that expresses itself in many ways, including abuse.
Right.
I think about this with respect to the Florida high school shooting. Now, what I'm about to say is by no means meant to be against gun control. I personally believe that that shooter should never have been permitted to have guns. But if we were to control all the guns, we would still have children like that teenager with broken families. You know, when you look at the histories of these shooters, you find that they come from families of divorce, or the families that never married, and families where there was, you know, a profound lack of love and brokenness, not just abuse. And children are more likely to be abused if they grow up in a household where one parent, particularly the father, is not present. So again, I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about gun control. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about justice to prosecute those who have committed abuse. We need to do all those things, but we also need to look at how in society we have not supported the natural family, and we have not worked harder on supporting marriage, and married couples also have not necessarily worked hard enough on staying married and on treating marriage as seriously as they need to treat it. And I think that when we're seeing these global seeming outbreaks of abuse, that those are some of the larger issues to consider.
Thank you, Donna. I'm going to go quickly just because I want to make sure I get as many calls in as I can. So let's go to Anonymous in Wisconsin. Anonymous, you are on. I'm sorry, time is short. So if you could phrase your question relatively quickly for Don.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
So the timing is good because you've been getting me to think more about this. But I work as a psychotherapist with predominantly women who've suffered sexual abuse in the military.
Thank you for what you do.
And, you know, I work in a secular setting, but I always try to integrate and ask questions about their faith, if that's a support, you know, a strong system for them, if it's part of a coping skill or part of their recovery. And, you know, I think I have no problem hearing from people that they can reconcile what's happened. They can think about forgiveness and that their relationship to God or Christ is intact. But I had someone say to me recently that the real breakdown was living out their faith in a religious community, reentering the church, being part of religion, worldly religion, when it's predominantly dominated by men in positions of authority. And that's a real cognitive dissonance. You know, someone said to me, how do I go back into a setting where I take instruction from a priest or from the Pope or from leaders of the church when, in general, it is men in positions of authority who have betrayed me?
Anonymous, thank you. We have a short time, so I'm going to let Don respond.
Thank you. Well, I think one thing that's helpful to remember is what St. John Paul II said in his letter Ordinatio Sacerdotalis, which is on the question of whether women might be ordained priests. He speaks in detail about how the church's non-ordination of women is not something that's intended to be a power play to keep women down, but is rather based on an understanding of the priesthood as being service, and that nobody who wants power should be a priest. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us as a church, priests and lay people, to really understand the priesthood in that way. And I do recommend reading John Paul II's letter for more on that.
Anonymous, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
We didn't have a little more time to deal with that. Dawn Eden Goldstein has been our guest. You can find her at dawneden.blogspot.com for the Dawn Patrol. And you're on Twitter quite active. What's your Twitter handle?
Dawn of Mercy.
Dawn of Mercy, or at Dawn of Mercy.
That's right.
At Dawn of Mercy. Dawn Eden Goldstein, the author of My Peace I Give You and Remembering God's Mercy, thank you very much for a very helpful hour.
Thanks so much, Si. God bless you.
We'll be back right after this with Gloria Purvis on being Black and Catholic in America, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.